Hi, I'm Susan Lewis. I sat down with composer Daniel Bernard Romain to talk about his opera, We Shall Not Be Moved. Set in 2017, the history of the 1985 police bombing of the Move House in West Philadelphia informs the story and haunts the characters. I asked him first how this work came into being.
Opera Philadelphia asked me to create a new chamber opera, and they then asked me to put together a creative team. And I immediately went to Mark Bamuti Joseph. We had already done about half a dozen works together, mostly large-scale works, Atlanta Ballet, Boston Children's Chorus, so on and so forth. And I love his words. And he came up with an original story involving five young runaway children from Philadelphia who have decided to learn from the ghost of other children. And Opera Philadelphia was courageous enough to allow the sensational aspects of the story and its non-direct connection to the MOVE organization and events to come into what is now We Shall Not Be Moved, a chamber opera directed by our mutual friend and colleague Bill T. Jones as director, choreographer, and dramaturg.
Now, it's an opera festival. Is this an opera? It seems like it's a genre all of its own.
Ooh, I hope so. The very first libretto I got from Mark, he said, We Shall Not Be Moved, a hybrid opera into unequal acts. I think Mark is just a very brilliant writer, and I think, obviously, Bill is a brilliant director, and they're both brilliant storytellers. I'm not. I'm a composer. So I take words, and I set those words to music in a musical way. I set those words into a musical setting, I should say. If this is something new that kind of combines the best of opera and maybe the best of Broadway and the best of a movie and the best of modernist, as we say, interdisciplinary work, great. Because that's exactly what I think we're trying to do.
That's great. Now, you say it's not about MOVE. It's how that event has affected people today.
Yeah, I mean, like those OGs, the original ghosts in Mark's story, the opera begins with an overture that tells you the story of MOVE. We all agreed it was important for people to understand what happened there. However, this is an original story, and Mark is purposefully unclear as to whether the house that they've taken residence in is that house. It's never clear if the four ghosts are the four of the ghosts of the six children that died in that fire. I mean, things are left up to the imagination. In fact, it's never really clear if these five children are imagining these four ghosts or not. But what is clear is that it's in Philadelphia. It involves five runaway children. And it's very clear to those children that they've had it with the public school system here. They'd rather learn from ghosts. And in that, there's a lot of truth.
So the music spans this wonderful range. You have operatic singing, you have hip-hop singing and dance, you have spoken word. How did you approach the composition? What informed your choices as to what kind of music to put with what narrative?
Well, that was really easy. I mean, you know, for me, I've never had writer's block. It's just very easy for me to look at a scene, to look at a sentence, to look at a word, and know immediately what I want to do with it musically. So in this case, I had been living with this libretto for so long. I know these characters so intimately. And, you know, Mark's writing is so compelling. We've been working together now, oh my God, do I want to say 7 years? Maybe longer. Looking at any scene that Mark presented to me within the libretto, it was clear what had to happen musically. Very clear. Even the stage directions that Mark gives are incredibly musical. He'll say things like, John Blue should be singing this as though kind of tortured and twisted from the inside, describing a transgender person. One of the Johns is John Blue. He identifies as a young boy born a girl. So, you know, even the stage directions have so much information that writing the music was not difficult at all. And more to the point, I think that each character, each scene is so clear, that's what's giving you this diversity in the musical language.
For example, John Blues singing.
Yeah, John Blues' first big aria in We Shall Not Be Moved is this very long and extended, almost emo and techno aria song, in which it was very important to me that I always remember that Mark is describing teenagers. So for me, what he's saying in that aria and how the music is reflecting is what he's saying was very important. You know, sometimes you have multiple musical styles that are kind of falling on top of one another. But that happens. That happens in techno music, and it happens in electronic music all the time.
What do you mean?
Well, you'll have a beat, and that beat can support samples from other records. So whether it's Skrillex or even to the extent that Trent Reznor, Nine Inch Nails, I mean, electronic music has the ability and the allowance and the terrain to take in records, you know, other people's music all the time. Not just sampling, but in this notion of taking the strings from one record to create a texture for, you know, the current project or the current record. So that's what I was doing. You've got this pulsating drum beat. You have these strings that in some ways kind of sound sample from another record. And then you have this countertenor voice, which for your audience, it's a male voice that's very high in the register. It sounds like a soprano. It sounds like a young woman, quite frankly. So, you know, you're combining this operatic voice with this very heavy, hard, techno, electronic beat, electronic bass, these beautiful legato strings. Actually, there's a little bit of synthesizer in there and piano at times. Yeah, it's a potent soup, sonic soup.
And this beautiful trio from scene two, when they're trying to decide, I guess, what to do at a critical moment in the drama. Were you approaching it the same way?
Oh, yeah, always. I mean, unsung is our spoken word artist. Spoken word is harder to hear in the ear than sung. It doesn't have as much power. So I have to create these beds of sound, these textures that allow her voice to be heard, oftentimes against the opera singers. In this case, a wonderful bass in Adam Richardson as John Mack, and again, our countertenor, John Holliday as John Blue. So that trio is very interesting because you know, throughout the opera, I'm always thinking about color. You know, there's a German word, Klangfarbenmelodie, which is tone, color, melody. I think it's a term that Anton Webern coined. And what he was getting at is that for him, if you look at the independent elements of music, sound, harmony, melody, rhythm, form, texture, arguably there are six, there are probably more, but let's deal with these six. Anton Webern is saying that tone, not even texture, tone, the color of a sound, what differentiates A440 on a piano versus A440 on a violin or a bassoon, right? So Klangfarbenmelodie has to do with tone colors, that for him, his music, by the way, primarily, and certainly even for mine, we're always dealing with, and I love this, by the way, I hadn't thought about it this way, I'm always dealing with the color of the music, not just the color of the cast, by the way, which is a, kind of a, you know, I'm talking now in analogy, but I'm literally always thinking about how can I get the most colors, the most sonorities out of a very small chamber orchestra. And because that was very important to the story. I mean, John Blue, if you think about it as a name, is brilliant because not only is it a countertenor voice, a male, our actor, John Holliday, is a black man, you know, a wonderful black man, but he has this incredible voice, which is so unusual. And the character really speaks to the pain of that transition. And, you know, from our politics to sometimes our employment, we are still grappling with what it means for a transgendered person and or the transgendered community to be part of us. And I think that name, John Blue, says so much. It talks about the blues. It talks about even blue as blood, right? Blood turns blue, the bruise. There's a lot in, this is the work of a poet and a wordsmith and a storyteller, all in a name.
Wow. Well, you mentioned a lot of things there, and I think that a lot of themes run through this, themes of identity. or one, which run through some of your other works. What do you want the audience to be taking away from this?
I always say when audiences come to see anything that I've created or been a part of, I want them to have a good, important time. I'm not out for confrontation. I think the theater is a kind of sacred space. It's a place for communion. Now, that doesn't mean that you shouldn't be challenged. That doesn't mean you're going to like everything that you hear or see, for that matter. It doesn't even mean that you will necessarily agree with what I've done or what, you know, this work represents. That's not the point. The point sometimes of art, and this is art, this isn't a record, this isn't entertainment, by the way. I'm very clear about that. The function of very sophisticated art is to provoke and inspire and provide. I can tell you, I could put it another term, when you look at a drum kit and you look at the fragility of a violin, I can tell you that if the drum kit wanted to beat the violin into submission, it could. But in my score and in my world, the violin and the drum kit literally make music with one another. And We Shall Not Be Moved, a spoken word artist and a mezzo-soprano, they literally make music with one another. You know, that is the American dream, if you will, if we really have to have one. I don't like binary thought anyway. I would just say that's the dream. All music has begins as experiment. This country began as experiment. The experiment is what, when we say that? I think it has to do with putting things together that may or may not work. So any chef, any cook will tell you, right? Any parent will say, you have one child and another, and you hope and you pray that they'll love one another. That's what we're getting at when we say the experiment. Even Mark, I think when he says hybrid artist, hybrid opera, I think what he was getting at is this may or may not work. And it's as simple as that. I said a good, important time. I feel that my responsibility, not as a composer, but as a Black, Haitian, American composer, is to be responsible to ideas that may or may not work. So this opera, like Hamilton, like Porgy and Bess, absolutely, like any work by Schoenberg, these attempts at radical self-expression echo what is happening in our communities every day. And that's what I think Mark is getting at. And that's what I think this story is getting at. That's what I want people to remember when they come into this story. We're going to talk a lot about race and sexual identity. This story grapples a lot with the things that have separated this city, this country, and one another. But you know what? At the end of the day, it really is about truth and reconciliation. Can we understand one another? Can we have a conversation with one another? Can we truly, and this is such a dirty word, it's so hard to say, can we truly love one another? So for me as a composer, I'm really wanting to create work that matters, work that challenges. And when you leave the theater, that's when I hope the work really resonates. In the post-show conversation, in the dreams you might have that night, and in the inspiration you might feel a few days later.
Wow. Well, thank you so much, DBR. Yeah. And it's been great talking to you. Congratulations on this work.
Thank you. Thank you for this interview. Thank you for allowing me to just spend some time with you and your listeners.
Everything you hear on WRTI is made possible by members. Please join today.